The global shortage of vital semiconductor chips delivers a fresh blow to the world's biggest car maker. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Toyota says it will slash global production by 360,000 cars next month. That says a fresh outbreak of the coronavirus Delta variant has gripped Southeast Asia in recent weeks. It's affecting Toyota's ability to get its hands on car components, including semiconductor chips. The BBC's Mariko Oi has more on that story from Tokyo.
Until now, Toyota has fared better than its rivals despite the ongoing shortages of semiconductors. It had a large stockpile of chips thanks to its business plan, which was revamped in the wake of the 2011 earthquake. But the company says a recent surge in COVID-19 cases in Southeast Asia has made the global shortage worse. It's told the BBC it started to feel the crunch in August, but it'll have to slash production even more in September. After the cut was reported by local media, the company's shares fell, ending the day almost 4.5% lower. In Tokyo, I'm the BBC's Mariko Oi for Marketplace.
Well, those jitters about a fresh wave of COVID-19 in Asia and stability over the global pandemic recovery have helped spark a fresh sell-off across financial markets this morning. Hong Kong's Hang Seng closed down 2.4%, while the TOPIX in Tokyo shed 1.4%, and the Shanghai Composite lost 0.5%. Here in Europe, the CAC 40 in Paris is down almost 3% this morning, while benchmarks in Frankfurt, London, and Milan are down in the 1.4% to 2% range. Commodity prices are also taking a hit. Oil benchmarks are down in the 3% to 4% range. Copper is at a 2-month low, and iron ore has plunged 10%. The International Monetary Fund has become the latest to cut support for Afghanistan due to growing uncertainty over the country under Taliban rule. The IMF said Afghanistan will no longer be able to access emergency reserves. That includes $460 million that was due to arrive next week as part of the organization's response to the pandemic crisis. The BBC's Andrew Walker explains what Afghanistan's economic future looks like as international financial support fades.
Afghanistan is in a very difficult economic position for sure. It's a highly aid-dependent economy, and clearly the international donors are looking very hard at the extent to which they want to continue with that aid support. The IMF decision is in the context of a much wider exercise that the IMF is doing to try and reinforce the global economy, and actually these assets that Afghanistan is not going to get are also being distributed to all the other IMF members. So it's a kind of exercise in its own right. But I think more widely, aid donors are looking very carefully, and there are some signs, not that they're actually pulling out altogether, but that they will be willing to consider using aid as a kind of lever to try and discipline the conduct of the Taliban regime.
And that's, I guess, kind of the big question is, where can Afghanistan turn to for more financial help? I mean, just in November, a number of governments, including Germany, Finland, the U.S., they all pledged $12 billion to civilian aid over 4 years. But all of that was conditional on protecting human rights or progress on peace talks. So what next, really?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of speculation that China and Russia are likely to be very interested in developing their relationships with the Taliban regime. Certainly China is said to have relatively good relationships with the Taliban. So those are certainly possibilities.
The BBC's Andrew Walker for us. Thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Victoria.
To Cuba now, where new laws governing social media use came into effect this week. They allow internet providers to cut off access to those who spread fake news, call for public disturbance, or hurt the state's image. That sparked fresh outrage among residents who have taken to the streets this summer to express anger at the government's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. The BBC's Pascal Fletcher has more on that.
Well, I think what we've mostly seen is reaction on what I'd call Cuban dissident and Cuban exile sites, very critical of these new rules, basically calling them an attempt at censorship of the internet, and of course associating them to the government crackdown that followed the 11 July protests, which, as we know, were particularly sort of fed through social media in the sense that they kind of received a lot of impetus by people seeing them on social media and then perhaps also coming out and protesting in different towns. But besides that, we've also seen an interesting reaction even on what are controlled and curated pages of Cuban state media, particularly the Cuba Debate government website where people post opinions. There's actually a very interesting debate that's developed there with people sort of asking, well, does this mean we can't sort of denounce things that are not well done by the government and problems and issues and criticism of officials? What happens to that? There's a whole debate raging there with hundreds of postings, which is very interesting. People are basically feel that their right to criticize is going to be curtailed. And these are, and remember, those pages are curated. So that debate's, you know, happening internally.
Has the government responded to any of that? I mean, is there any clarity about what these rules will cover as far as that goes?
Well, we've certainly seen responses, for example, from the foreign minister, Bruno Rodriguez, coming out and saying that the government has the right to sort of defend itself against cyber terrorism and fake news, pointing out that a lot of other governments have actually done the same thing with regulations. I mean, that is true. Lots of governments around the world have put in place laws and regulations seeking to defend their systems against fake news and defamation and things like that. But of course, in the Cuban context, where, as we know, political opposition and even criticism actually already was penalized, becomes a really hot issue. And people are seeing it as just a further attempt to quell dissent and criticism.
The BBC's Pascal Fletcher for us. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Well, finally, we've talked a lot here about the ongoing economic crisis in Lebanon a year after a deadly port explosion. It's caused fuel shortages and extended power cuts, but now militant group Hezbollah says it's arranged fuel shipments from Iran to ease that pressure. The first vessel is due to set sail today and more soon to follow. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.